While inconceivable to most Americans, at least 460,000 homes in the United States do not have a functioning bathroom or lack adequate plumbing. Such third world conditions are not only a housing problem, but also detrimental to the environment, public health, and safety. A safe, sanitary, and decent home for every household in the United States should not be merely a goal, but rather an expectation in the most prosperous nation in the world. Many housing problems in the United States seem intractable, but the number of homes without adequate plumbing has declined dramatically over the past few decades. Taking a page from the public health field, with a final push of resources and energy, we can eradicate this housing and health scourge once and for all. Lance George, in his concept paper, The Last Outhouse. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. According to Gerald Weingrad in the January 24, 2020 Sunday Capitol in Annapolis, globally 2.2 billion people, 29%, do not have safe drinking water. 3 billion people lack basic hand washing facilities. At the same time, Weingrad reminds us that 60% of the world, 4.5 billion people, don't have a home toilet safely managing human waste. Closer to home, Lance George, research director at the Housing Assistance Council in Washington, D.C., tells us that at least 460,000 homes in the U.S. do not have a functioning bathroom or lack adequate plumbing. And still closer to home, here on the Eastern Shore, a 2016 report from the Accomack Northampton Planning District Commission states that Virginia's Eastern Shore, and let me quote here, has many residences that lack indoor plumbing. Residents in these circumstances often use night pails, unpermitted privies, or backyard porta potties. In addition to the impact on quality of life for residents, that anticipated problem results in human waste disposal practices that threaten water quality in the Chesapeake Bay watershed and endanger the local seafood and tourism industry. Historically, the full extent of the problem has not been documented here, but is suspected to impact hundreds of homes. My guest today is Lance George, research director at the Housing Assistance Council, and we're talking about these third world conditions that exist here at home. Lance, welcome to Delmarva Today.
Thank you, Hal. It's a pleasure to join you and your listeners, and we appreciate you giving attention to this important yet often overlooked issue. So thank you.
Lance, you mentioned that there are at least 460,000 homes that do not have a functioning bathroom or lack adequate plumbing facilities. What is the state of national and regional research on the availability of adequate sanitation and potable water? Do we really know the extent of this problem?
It shouldn't be a complicated answer, but unfortunately, I think there's more complication again than there should be. In our research efforts, we unequivocally believe that the 460,000, it's now somewhere in the neighborhood of 468,000 households, is definitely an undercount. We just simply don't have as good a data as we should. I would say a significant moment in that history, especially for something that's so elemental, a significant moment was the 1980 census, which dramatically scaled back the level of information that we have. In prior censuses, there was much more detailed household information and household characteristic information. And as of the 1980 census, that was dramatically scaled back. So we don't have as much good quality information on housing characteristics and detailed housing characteristics as we should. To further that, even more recently, in the mid to late 2000s, the Census Bureau actually took off the question from major surveys, and that would be the equivalent of the census today, does your house have a properly running flush toilet, or does it contain a flush toilet? Under the auspices of that was a burden, an undue burden on the American public. So I would say we've gone in the wrong direction, where we're actually reducing the level of information that we have. I would say that I would like to point to some larger trends, and notably that we don't have as much information as we should. But I'll give you an example. In 1960, about 30% of rural households did not have access to running water or lacked adequate plumbing facilities. That had declined in 1970 to about 14% of households. As of the most recent data that we have, it's less than 1% of all households. Now, again, I reiterate that we think that's an undercount, but I don't think it's magnitudes larger. And I think that plays into some of our strategies about how we think about this.
Well, we heard in the report from the ACAMAC and Commission report that people with inadequate plumbing facilities in their house use night pails and use porta potties in the backyard and so forth. What is the impact of the lack of plumbing facilities and adequate bathroom facilities on families?
So I think it's a much more nuanced or nuanced answer than just what is sometimes maybe an obvious observation or the initial observation. It's a housing issue. It's a personal dignity issue. As you well noted, it is an environmental issue, a very important environmental issue. And then finally, I think there are several impacts, but it's a public health issue. And I'll give you one good example in a situation that we're currently in, which is the kind of the COVID-19 crisis. I'm not a public health expert, Hal. I'm a housing researcher, but you can't tell me that the lack of running water to bathe and to access water is not exacerbating or hurting this situation. This is a problem that should have been solved in the last century, but it is severely compounding just a public health from a public health perspective. And I'll give you another example. I'm often someone who works, you know, almost exclusively in data and large data sets and analyses. But if you allow me, I'd just like to give a personal perspective, a personal story. My great grandmother, who I was close to, I'm from Appalachian, Eastern Kentucky, didn't have a properly working bathroom. She had an outhouse. She didn't have a functioning bathroom. She broke her hip walking to that outhouse and had to go into a nursing home. And laying out some of these ramifications about the housing issues and the dignity, she went into that nursing home. Very quickly, the cost of that depleted her entire life savings. She became, in essence, a pauper, an award of the state. And, you know, after that point, relatively large federal expenditures to pay for her stay in the nursing home. And she could never go back. She could probably have been released, but they wouldn't let her go home because she didn't have a properly working bathroom and the health officials would not release her to that home. So I just say that's, I think, an example. And I know it's a personal example. And it's an anecdote, but I think it's a kind of a story that illustrates how this issue impacts across a relatively wide range. And as you note, the environmental issue, she had a straight pipe that was going out into a ditch, and that didn't help anybody in that community either.
Well, how about health? You mentioned the susceptibility to COVID pandemic. How does the lack of water, the lack of a bathroom affect the health conditions of individuals?
Again, I would reiterate that I'm not a public health expert. But I think you can only, there are kind of logical and common sense answers that are responses that this cannot help. Not having access to running water is a basic amenity that I think many Americans take for granted. And I think that encapsulates this larger issue that we might talk about. And I'm more of a houser. So sometimes I'm just as guilty of thinking about some of the larger issues around housing, investment value, and how close we are to good quality schools and neighborhoods when we are still dealing with an unacceptable number in this country of people who lack the most basic of amenities that are often thought of as only third world conditions. So I'm a little hesitant to talk about the public health dynamics. I think it's relevant and salient to this conversation and something we want to add to our discussion in the strategies, but we need to do more work on that.
There's also a very obvious relationship between water, running water, potable water, and sanitation facilities. Can you say something about that relationship?
In trying to assess strategies and solutions and just better understanding this market, it's very clear. And as I noted, and as you noted, how we work at the Housing Assistance Council, and housing has been our primary domain. That's where we work. But obviously housing is a bundle of goods. It's associated with a whole range of elements across all of your housing needs. And one of those are the basic infrastructure of getting water to the house. So that can't be divorced from this larger issue or conversation. I would say at the Housing Assistance Council, some of our strategies have been more around the actual housing. How do we get this infrastructure, once it gets to the final mile to the house? But half or more of this conversation is water infrastructure and water supply in the United States.
Well, tell me about the groups that you work with. I know the last time we talked, you mentioned that that HAC works with local organizations to address these issues. How do you work with these local organizations, and who are they, and what do they do, and what do you do for them?
Well, I think, just to talk largely about the Housing Assistance Council, or to initially talk about the Housing Assistance Council, we were largely formed in the early 1970s to address this specific problem, if I read the founding documents correctly, because this was a major housing problem in the late 1960s and 70s. Not to say it's not a major problem now, it's probably not the dominant concern. But the Housing Assistance Council has traditionally, we are based in Washington, D.C., and we have a regional presence. But our primary goal since our founding is to work with, and we often like to say, we help build homes and communities across rural America, and help is the operative word. We don't build or develop housing. That's not our role. We work with local community-based organizations, mostly nonprofit organizations, municipalities, tribal entities, and some for-profit entities, because they know what's best for their communities. And we try to help them develop, preserve, rehab, maintain, access housing in their communities across rural America. And we only work in the rural space. And through that, we understand that you know what's best for your community. And sometimes the solutions and the strategies are widely different across geographies, and they vary for a whole range of reasons. So our goal is to help those communities work and develop solutions in their actual community. We have loaned and grant funds that we provide the organizations. We provide technical assistance and training. And some of what you and I are talking about where I work is to provide information and data services to help inform sound policies and strategies. So that's our primary interface here, is to work at that juncture to say this is a community problem. It varies by community, but we want to empower the local community officials. At the same time, because Housing Assistance Council is based in Washington, D.C., and we have a long history and reputation, we are often consulted at the national level, right? The national debate. And we are a tertiary goal of this. I'd say the primary goal is to get the dollars on the ground to help solve this problem. But a larger goal is to help shed light on this often overlooked or forgotten issue.
Let me go back to Lance, the local organizations that you work with. I think what I hear you saying is that you bring a couple of things to the table with these local groups. Number one, you bring money, and that is crucially important, it would seem, because that makes things happen, allows things to happen. And you bring technical assistance as well, a know-how to these local groups. How does that happen locally in terms of providing adequate water? Do you work with communities to establish water facilities, or how do you get water into these homes that you help the families that you help rather the local organizations build?
I think it's a definite, it's definitely an important part of the dynamic. As I noted, we primarily focus on the housing. I would note that there are some amazing entities and solutions and strategies that work more on the water side than we do at the Housing Assistance Council. And our goal, I think, is to provide some of that technical assistance to put the local organizations that deal with the housing in coordination more with the water and wastewater community. I would say that's just a bifurcation of how sometimes the resource allocation has been. It's been more segmented to housing and then water and wastewater. But I think we're increasingly trying to have synergies between those groups and those entities and break down some of those barriers so we can have a more comprehensive approach to this. But there's, as I'll reiterate, there's no doubt that the actual water supply source is salient and is actually probably one of the more important sources here. We've primarily been focused on the housing infrastructure, what the plumbing facilities look like when you get to the house. The Housing Assistance Council did some of that in the 70s and 80s, but we don't do as much of that now.
Let me move back to the extent of the problem, Lance, before we move on to solutions that you're looking at. You had indicated that that certain groups are impacted more severely than other groups. Who are these groups and where are they located? And what kind of focus do you have on them?
From the research perspective, and I'll step back with that, I think there are two, and I oftentimes use graphs and charts, and we're on the radio, but I welcome your guests to, or your listeners to go to the Housing Assistance Council website. We can illustrate this, or I can illustrate it a little more clearly. So we have the trajectory where there's been vast improvement in the incidence or reducing the incidence of households that lack adequate plumbing. But you'll notice if you were to look at a map, there are, I think, you know, it's kind of out of sight and out of mind, but at some point it's not. So from the rural perspective, the highest incidence, where it's stubbornly persistent, we've made great progress in reducing this concern or this problem, but where it's persistently problematic are in several high need, what we would call high need, persistently poor rural communities. And those would be, they really jump out at a map if you were just to map this. And the Housing Assistance Council has traditionally tried to work in these communities or place particular attention on them. It would be Central Appalachia, the lower Mississippi Delta, and the rural Southeast, the border colonia along the U.S.-Mexico border, and Native American lands. And I would have to say, if you were to just gauge and just the data tell you this, the problem is problematic and is highest, it's persistently problematic in those areas, but it is particularly problematic in some Native communities where we have the incidence of lacking adequate plumbing 20 times the national rate. And I think that is one area where it is directly related to these, what we noted before, these often kind of forgotten or hidden communities. In some respects, they are. I would make an important note, though. While there's been dramatic improvement in reducing this in rural communities, this is not solely the picture. At the Housing Assistance Council, we work in rural communities, but this is also an urban and suburban problem. About half of all housing units that lack adequate plumbing are either in suburbs or the cities, and most frequently in U.S. cities. So I don't want to discount it. I think that's an important dynamic, that this has to be a national approach. And I'll give you a couple of good examples. I have been personally through my housing work in communities in Detroit, Michigan, and households there lack adequate plumbing in a major metropolitan city. When I lived in Washington, D.C., I was aware of housing units that lacked adequate plumbing. The residents would go use the bathroom at the local grocery store or other places less than 2 miles from the U.S. Capitol. And this, we're not even taking into a larger account. I think many of these numbers don't take into account the Flint water crisis. And there are other similar water crises, particularly in the western part of the United States. So it is not purely a rural problem. It is a national problem that needs to be addressed.
Well, let's turn to the solutions. You are working on a program that you call the Last Outhouse. And tell us about that program and both what the solutions are and the actions to achieve some of those solutions.
Thanks. And I'll start with, I think, the larger macro narrative on this dynamic, and just refer back to that, what I think is the positive trajectory, where we've moved from, you know, in the early 60s, 30% of households not having adequate plumbing, down to, it's probably more than 1% of the occupied households, but probably not magnitudes larger. And I think in some respects, that is a very important point. In other respects, I'll step back and talk about some of the issues that we deal with the Housing Assistance Council, and we talked about them earlier. But in some respects, and this is my personal belief, some of the issues that we deal with, how they feel intractable. And I don't mean to be so pessimistic, but simply stated, I don't think this government or our country puts forth the resources that could be invested to solve some of these solutions. And we see this in the burgeoning affordability crisis. We have large number of owners and renters who simply can't afford their housing or are paying too much for their housing. And some of those problems really do feel almost intractable without more resources. But this, we have made dramatic progress on this issue. And it feels like, that it is achievable. For once, it feels like there's an achievable goal. Now, granted, it should have been solved in the last century. This is, to some degree, this is a national embarrassment. It just is. But at the same time, with a modicum of resources and some investment and some attention, this can be solved. It's almost, you mentioned how the public health perspective, again, I'm a Hauser, but sometimes in the public health world, and we're talking about that now, eradicating something. This can be eradicated. It is an achievable solution. We are down to the last, say, 500,000 to 1 million units, but that is achievable. It absolutely is. So that's the larger perspective. The strategies going forward in the Last Outhouse is still conceptual. It's largely a campaign because the real work will be done, as you know, by the communities themselves. But we are trying to get resources and attention to direct it to that's going to be the primary strategy. And there are several other elements that we already talked about, that it's not just the housing. We want to bring attention to this, but we have to talk about the other part of the equation, which is the water supply issue. It is exceedingly important in this entire discussion. So the primary goal of the Last Outhouse is to make the Last Outhouse. That is very simple, but it's more of a collective. It's not just the Housing Assistance Council. We are garnering partners for a multifaceted approach at different levels. One would be at a national or a public attention level to say, look, this is still a problem. It is still really problematic in these communities that we highlighted nationally, and that we can eradicate this. It is achievable and solvable solution. There are public investment issues that can be bolstered and increased. We primarily work with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and USDA Rural Development. Some of those programs can be expanded. They have resources and programs directed to this. They just need to be more fully resourced. I think the real strategy is at the local level, is to get attention and resources to local community-based organizations. And I will say this, I would be a broken record, because they know what's best for their community. And what works in one community, what might work in a community in the Delmarva of Maryland, how will not work as well in Arizona, where we have very high incident rates of this. But the community leaders and the community officials know those actors, and they know what will work in those communities. If you give them the resources, they do amazing work. This is one of the untold stories. The community-based organizations, they are some of the most resourceful, impactful organizations I have ever seen, and they work on shoestring budgets. Imagine what would happen if you gave them actual resources, what they could do. And I think this is an issue that has been somewhat overlooked and passed by in the larger national debate, where we do worry about housing affordability. That is a major challenge. And we do worry about some other issues that, again, I think are, they are truly first world problems, about the investment value or where your home is located. They're all very important, but we can solve this. We can eliminate this scourge.
Lance, what are you doing to increase the awareness of the problem? And I know you do what I would call, anyway, policy work, which would involve the distribution of resources. So are you publishing? Are you having conferences that highlight these issues? What are you doing on the national level? And I know you're here talking to our community, which I greatly appreciate. What are you doing to address this information, this out of sight, out of mind issue?
So I was gonna say thank you for bringing attention to this. This is, and I would say the last Hout House, people have been working on this, Hal, you know yourself, for the last few decades, right? Have been, but we are trying to be more intentional, because I think this issue has gotten lost. So it is a very nascent issue, a nascent effort. The last Hout House is, it's not a nascent issue, but I think it's gotten lost in some of the larger, at least in the housing world, where the Housing Assistance Council works and we work, it's maybe gotten lost in the larger debate about housing finance reform, GSE reform, banking reform. And we have been much more intentional about putting that on the list. Just recently, in our discussions with the new administration, we were very intentional to say, this is going to be on the list. This is a major problem that's been overlooked and can be achieved and solved. So I would say, at least from the Housing Assistance Council, the last outhouse is a relatively nascent effort and initiative, but it doesn't lack in importance. And we've been much more intentional about raising that issue, and we appreciate your assistance in that effort.
Are you publishing at all, Lance? Are you planning to publish?
So I would say we publish in several ways. We do hope to publish, a larger document, I would say, or a larger effort. We need some additional resources. Candidly, that's what the stage that we're in the last outhouse, is to garner mostly private philanthropic resources to expand the message. To do good, solid research, it just doesn't grow on trees. We have to have, sometimes that's expensive work, especially noted some of the data constraints that we have, right? We need to tell a compelling story here. And we want to make sure that we have the accurate data and information to inform sound solutions. We do continually, though, in resources, pay attention to this in our data platforms, in our maps, and we post this on the Housing Assistance Council website. So I think we're doing a multifaceted effort, but we look forward to expanding and ramping up this issue.
Well, I think you guys do an excellent job. And Lance, I want to thank you for bringing this issue to our attention. I think we're all in our debt for the work that you guys at HAC are doing. And I also believe you're certainly right in your concept paper on the last outhouse. A safe, sanitary, and decent home for every household in the United States should not be merely a goal, but rather an expectation of the most prosperous nation in the world. This is Delmarva Today. Thank you all for listening. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.